Hi, everybody. David Donaldson here with another episode of Entrepreneurial Impact. And today, it's just Joe and I. Joe, I feel like it's been a little while. You know, we've been pretty strong about having amazing guests over the last calendar year. And I guess that's kind of where we look like is here we are at the end, essentially, of year three. How crazy is that?
I mean, I love it because I think we're fine. I mean, I love it just because this is an awesome discussion points that we bring in for different people that, you know, highlight some experts and some people that have different perspectives than us. And I think it's been an awesome experience of talking about not being the smartest person in the room for our topics and be able to get different voices and perspective, which I believe is huge in not only development, but education and just being able to provide value to everybody that tunes in and my own personal and your development as well. I think it's cool just to see those different perspectives. But it's been when you do something that you do and love and enjoy doing on a regular basis, it's kind of crazy. We've been 3 years. It doesn't feel like we've been doing it for 3 years.
We kicked off in April of 2022, right? So like I said, just under three full years. And, you know, we're kicking off right around 140 episodes of, you know, nonstop entertainment, if we can call it that, for our audience as we see our growth. But it's been an amazing, fun ride, and I appreciate being along that with you. So we've seen a lot of things happen, and you know, having been in the business a while, like I've seen some of the ebbs and flows. Unfortunately, I'm becoming part of history as long as I've had my real estate license now, and we've seen some of the ebbs and flows, and from 07 to 1920 with COVID spikes, right, to where we are today. All different ramifications of why things have happened, right? Although lessons learned. Here's what we can look at this year and just kind of list off some of the things that we experienced, right? We had the lawsuit, which was kind of the big ominous thing. It was out there for a while, but the settlement. And now here we are, not just past settlement, but past approvals. Let's start there. There was a lot of concern, rightfully so, around this topic. Where are we now with this? How do you feel about it now that it's in the rearview mirror a little, right? It's going to take more time, but we're past settlement and now we are past approval, right, for what the settlement was. How do you feel coming at the end of 2024 around the NAR?
I think the one thing that immediately pops into my head is when you say, how do you feel, Joe? I don't feel anything about it. I'll tell you why, because my feelings around this whole situation doesn't change the economics, the industry, or what's going to pave the future. And I think that like when humans there's this whole, I've been reading Sales EQ by Jeff Blunt that, you know, talked about fanatical prospecting. And one of the things he was talking about, like, is just that we allow disruptive emotions to impede our ability to define our future, because like we are inherently as humans emotional, right? And it's because of feelings that we redo something, or, you know, it feelings drive a lot of us in like our behaviors and our habits. And I think when I think about the lawsuit, like maybe I'm just like psychotic or a sociopath, I don't know what it may be, right? But like I look at it and say, like, I have no control on any of that. There was some people in Sitzer Burnett in Missouri. So thank you, Missouri. Give a big shout out to the state of Missouri. Thank you for allowing that to us. Right. So I'm going to pass blame over to them. But inherently, like, it could have happened in any state, and they stopped some copycat lawsuits. And frankly, like, I look at it, and this might not be the best thing to ever say, is that our industry was ripe for like disintermediation and disruption because of how we've historically provided value. Is that most of us, at the high point, we had 1.6 million realtors, right? Most states are somewhere between 60 to 120 hours. You need a high school education and you sit and do a, you know, an online thing for 60 to 120 hours. You sit down, do a 45-minute test. You've been now approved for national and state level education. And these properties are being sold. Everything that you learn on that test has nothing to do with lead generation, needs analysis, negotiation skills, things you can offer and negotiate, and also things around settlement, from, you know, being able to be an expert with mortgage products and who's the best title, insurance, appraising, inspections. Like, it's all these different things that, like, if you look at just the state tests to get licensed compared to what an actual home advisor needs to be. The skill sets are completely different. And I think the biggest thing I see is huge opportunity in a down market, where I get excited about that. Because if you're going to tell me that we've already seen it go from, we just got November stats from NAR, you know, in October was 155,000 for NA, or 1.55 million right now for November 2024, it's 1.52 million in total memberships. So I look at that and say, we're at all time highs, and that I'm going to bet on myself. I'm going to control what I can control. And I know that if I go into the market, like, I'm going to crush it. Not because of anybody being bad. It's just that I know exactly what the consumer needs. They need an advisor, they need a risk mitigator, and they need somebody to talk to about how they can deploy their capital into these home purchases so they can max out the return. So the days of like, yeah, here's your five options, and I don't really want to tell you anything because I don't want to be liable for your decision. Like, you have financial advisors and CPAs and attorneys that say, hey, here's your three options. I'm going to go on the book and say, these are my like legal professional opinion on how you could pursue this. I might give you three options, but I'm not going to tell you not to do them or give you four options and give you no guidance. Like, I think there's a time now to step into the advisory role and actually say, this is what your risk mitigation is going to look like. This is what could happen. These are the options. And then also, like, how I'm going to help you actually deploy your capital the best use necessary, right? Like, maybe you don't need to have 25% down. Let's get 12.5 on your primary and put 12.5 on your investment and actually be an advisor and stop being a broker of like deals and just a transactional person that actually provides value, so that like when they think of real estate and investing or my primary function, I'm calling Joe or Dave, because they're not going to give me some, they're not going to be an order receiver. They're actually a true partner in that. And I think that lawsuit, if you were to take anything else, and I have gone long winded on this one, I think that lawsuit single-handedly put a spotlight on what is your value.
If you have that, value, that's it. Right.
That's my thought.
Value is the determining result for agents coming out, right? I completely, completely agree with that. The rest of it's noise. Like, people like to rally around concern because they feel like they're doing something. Oh, like that eats up my time. I can focus on it. You're focusing on the wrong things. But you want to be involved, go get involved, join the board, right? Run, get on committees, make change. Don't let that impact your business, because there's still, even at 4 million or sub 4 million units this year, we're talking about highs in a lot of areas, very, very lows in transactions, right? But it's still a massive amount, right? So don't get caught up on the lawsuit, because it hasn't affected your day to day. If you focused on your business and your growth and your relationships, right? And maintaining that home relationship, that consumer relationship going forward. Now, there are other things we're going to continue to see, right? Our local board is implementing 16 contract changes, right? That's Northern Virginia Association of Realtors. We'll see those continuously get worked out. Just stay abreast of the changes. It's not going to affect your business, right? The 16 states that had prior broker laws in place prior to the settlement was ahead of where they could be, but were they having conversations around value? Not, okay, focus on your value. Now we're seeing a lot of different brokerages and states start to stand up, and Arizona and Colorado are starting to look at things like, hey, we're going to allow non-NAR members going to the MLS. Who cares? Okay, that's another option that's value. We've got brokerages in our state starting to give that as an option. It's just leveling the playing field, right? And looking at different things. I personally still think there is value in NAR, but it's a perceptual value for the agents to understand. And now that they have choice, as long as it doesn't affect how they do business and what they focus on, doesn't matter to me, right? They're worried about the pennies that they might save in board dues and memberships and representation. Again, I go back to go get involved.
Yeah, I think that value, participation, education is going to be like pretty high up there. All right, so let's recap 2024. So everybody from brokerage to real estate agents to consumers, let's go through that, right? So I'll make this very simple. There was a ton of like the smallest since 1994 in unit count transacted across the U.S. So we were annualized in November at 3.96 million units, which would be, once again, the lowest since 1994 that's transacted. Yes, you want to know what, like, feelings-wise? If you were hustling and doing four times the work to make the same amount of money last year, that's probably pretty accurate based on the transactions of what you want to talk, like golden handcuffs because of interest rates. And I think that for the most part, in my perspective, is that, yes, that number needs to be at like 5.5% and an interest rate for most people to say, okay, I'll sell my home. Now, let's be clear. So that's numbers, right?
Yep.
That's why brokerage has felt it. That's why agents have felt it. It's why LOs have felt it. It's why title companies have felt it. Yes, the volume of units transacting has gone down substantially, right? So yes, if you're feeling profit and all these different things, yes, it's 100% what's happening. It's why you're seeing in the real estate sector why it's underperforming compared to some of the other financial sectors or AI. You're seeing like growth in the, you know, S&P 500, NASDAQ. It's because you don't have a whole lot of real estate in there, and those real estate companies are feeling it because the transactions, most of their revenue is coming from cost of sale or from, you know, businesses transacting the real estate units. So that's why everyone feels so, like, you know, panicked, crazy, on edge, you know, emotions rising because of that, you know. And then you throw into it what you brought up earlier was the NAR settlement, is that, like, we've historically not seen buyers work, you know, buyers balking at their buyer broker agreement and what their compensation model is around that. I think everyone's going to have a different model. You're probably going to see some limited broker services. You're probably going to see some a la carte services, probably see some flat fees and, you know, whatever you want to call. I don't really care what the model is on it, but, you know, what your value is and who your consumer is going to determine how you're going to have your economics moving forward. And I think the biggest thing to think through is, like, you have a moment in time to think, and you have the epitome of the lowest. And I think looking at lowest unit count, that is, but the highest amount of agent count for a very long time. Now, if you want to look at something historically.
Well, I want to talk about agent count for a second, because here's the one thing I haven't seen, which was really, really interesting this year, right? One, we see people get out of the business, but not in the mass wave that if you went back to January, we thought we might see. And two, especially locally, I mean, again, we're a national program here, Joe, but if we look at our local numbers here in the DC metro area in Virginia, we've seen still continue massive amounts of people to get their licenses.
So here's my bet. All right. So if one of my business partners, Bowman Keaty, says no one ever gets remembered because, you know, because they said something that everybody else said. It's always the maverick that goes out like John the Baptist, you know, into, or Moses into the desert, and you're crazy, but then all of a sudden it comes true. So here's what I did. I'm, you know, finance background, and I like numbers, not because I'm like I just like numbers tell a story. And if you can figure out what numbers are telling you, you have an indication of education, but inside information to make better decisions on. So I went back through. Now, I'll give you some projections so everyone, you don't have to read this out, but Housing Wire, Altos Real Research, Zillow, and Goldman Sachs have all come out with a projection of between 4.2 million and 4.3 million units transacted for 2025. Shocker, NAR came out and said 4.9 million. I wonder why that is, right? Why is Altos and all them saying, hey, there's probably a 200 basis point spread. They're anticipating anywhere from, you know, 5.75 all the way up to 7.75 as a spread of interest rates for next year. Because you've got all kinds of challenges. You've got international conflicts. You've got the tariffs that could go into effect. You've got the fact that, hey, everybody understands that, you know, housing materials are primarily coming from Canada and Mexico. And then if you put an immigration reform on it, most day laborers is coming from Mexico. So I just want to understand that, you know, if you cause some of these tariffs that are going to indicate towards inflationary costs, it's going to cause housing to be even more of a strapped commodity. And if pricing from an affordability standpoint keeps going up, you have a hard time getting in and transacting units. Because also I just saw from Altos, it was, I think, 24 or 28% of all homes last year transacted were first-time home buyers. Historically, over the past 30, 40 years, it's been over 40% of homes transacted are first-time home buyers. So, like, you're getting into some of these challenges here. Yeah. But my point behind talking about the unit count, right, is that unit count is also an indicator of agent count, which I think is where you're going with this, Dave. So I ran a ChatGPT does some great things, but if you can pull data points, I pulled the past 24 years agent count first units. 2005 had the highest agent count. 2008 had the lowest, where it actually dropped. So you almost had a 2.5-3 year spread between that. That's also where you saw 2005 was the highest unit count as well. And then you started seeing it slowly dip in 2006, bottom out in 2007. You also saw it bottom out in 2008. So it took almost a 2.5 years, a 3 year like descend where unit counts dropped at its highest. and then you hit, you know, under a million in NAR. So this regression analysis, I look at it, I could see that NAR gets sub 1.3 million agents as far as agent count. I could see that because the regression analysis put it at like 1.2 million. I don't think it's going to fall out that much, but here's why. You have a direct correlation to units. You also have a disintermediation on how people get paid. And you're also seeing a lot more transparency around what is the value of homes. So if you put all those things together, and you're also saying that, hey, you don't have to be a member of NAR in order to get access to an MLS and contracts, you see a lot of disintermediation happening, and you could see a lot of the NAR's memberships drop, which I could see happening. And I do believe it's going to happen.
Well, and that'll be the differing factor. Like if NAR, if we look at membership count, right, that's, they're not tracking that as well as that they're going to need to going forward, right? Because you're going to see while NAR numbers come, it's not a true barometer of licensed transactions actually happening out there by some sort of representation. That's what's going to change. So when I say the field hasn't changed as dramatically as we thought, that's, if there is a 1.2 or a 0.3, that's not going to be a true reflection of people out there working in the business.
Correct. And you also, I mean, NAR came out and anticipated an 8% decline. So they're already anticipating a 1.4 million realtors at the end of 2025. So I'm saying more like I think it's going to be 1.2 million because I'm going to be heretic. Like, hey, I'm going to see 1.2 million. And then maybe it's not 1.2 million. I love that if it's not. But here's the biggest thing that I look at with that whole dynamic is that you have all these other outside factors you have no control on, but it's causing, which is the beauty of capitalism, is to actually define your value and provide top level, you know, impact to your consumer. And I think throughout all of history, the biggest thing is what's the impact? So as we look into the future, how do you impact your consumer at a higher level with either better education, better marketing, better product services, whatever the thing may be? And I think that's what we have to focus on. Because right now, going into NVAR, for those who are listening, they're in Northern Virginia, the DMV area, the Virginia NAR account came out yesterday that we got documents on. There was a 1,700 agent drop between October 2024 to November 2024. So you're starting to see the unit count, not that unit count issue of like, hey, I can't just receive a lead and transact on it. Like you actually have to lead gen, you have to provide value, you have to create a relationship and also provide products and service and an experience that people need. And that's why you're seeing this drop off, in my opinion.
Now, you touched on, obviously, we have some uncertainty, right? We're coming out of an election, right? So we know the results of that. It came out yesterday. It doesn't sound like there's going to be a change in the Fed chair, right? So it's like Powell's going to stay in place, right? So I think that's good because I think it'll create stability around where we have seen how he likes to do things, right? So I think that's good with the understanding that we'll probably see one or two or three changes, right, over 2025, not to the point that it's going to dramatically affect, but maybe we continuously trickle down closer to that six or sub six, where I think we all agree they want to settle in at. Two, when you talk about tariffs, right, Canada and Mexico, that is the one, and I'm not going to talk about tariffs as much as I'm going to talk about construction, that's the one hangover still from 07, 08, 09. We have never and will never catch up on the lack of new constructed homes. So that's when you reference numbers about first-time home buyers, that's really the biggest reason, because the affordable housing, that entry-level housing, that first, a true first-time home buyer, right, can't afford it, right? That's a huge factor about what happens and how can we make change. And there's really no way to do that because the housing inventory will continue to be too low.
Yeah, so here's, because we've got some limited time here, but I think, Dave, I'm going to go out and say what I forecast for 2025. After going through Fed and, you know, Fannie and Freddie, NVA, like all of our different areas, we go look at all this kind of stuff. I see 2025 being very similar to 2024. Here's the difference, though, is 2024 had massive change of expectations for buyers and sellers. 2025, they have come to realization of what buying and selling looks like in the market. You're already seeing price point, maybe price points appreciate by like 3 to 5%. I could see that.
Yeah.
You see some spike up in negotiations during the spring market, but inherently you're seeing days on market throughout the entire, at least in our state, has just increased. Days on market increasing. They're still getting at list price or above list price at closing. So like you're not seeing you know, being above, like it's listed inappropriately as far as price point goes. So I think you're going to get same type of transaction units, maybe a little bit more, you know, probably to 4.2, 4.3 million. I think that's accurate. I don't think interest rates go below 6%. I think they stay in somewhere around the 6.5. You know, we're at 6.81 this morning as we're recording this. I think agent count drops. I believe that new listings, like you said, are going to be a challenge. And I think unemployment's going to go up this next year, which will help out a little bit. I think the Fed is going to do probably, you know, they'll do one this month for a 25 basis point cut. I think they might do two or three next year in 2025, but they are not doing eight. And I believe that people still need to buy and transact. I think people are going to realize like, hey, this is our new norm. I hate to use that quote unquote, this is our new normal, but yeah. They now expect this interest rate, this type of inspections, this type of negotiations. And they're also now expecting what compensation looks like for representation.
And I think that's kind of where I see, when I see that change and going up from just, you know, when we said 3.92 to 4.2, 4.3, okay, wouldn't be great if we got 4.4, 4.5. When I see that change, that's exactly where I'm looking at. I'm looking at, we're another year removed from the new norm of, okay, I understand how awesome 3% was, right? But now what do I need to do, right? Where am I at in my life? Do I need to make a change, right? There's an interesting stat that came out that 44% of the sales, now this is a local Virginia, this came out at the NAR convention a couple of weeks ago. 44% of all sales last year that were by investors did not buy another property. Mm-hmm. I think, right? So that's an interesting stat, because what you're saying is like the investors are starting to sell. So we'll continue to see them sell off, right? Because the volume is so high as far as the value of their properties will continuously maintain and continuously grow up. The question is, where are they going with the other money, right? And is that an opportunity there for other people to not know, right? Hey, I've been sitting on this money for 20, 30 years and that don't understand capital gains. So when I look at, hey, how do we add inventory to the market? It's again, going back to the education of the agents, right? Being able to educate the people that own properties that think they might be trapped by antiquated cap gains laws, right? They changed about 87, right? That if they've been in the house that long, they think, oh, I only had this once, right? Or am I limited so much I can do? Get educated, put them in touch with the right people. That could change, right? If you're in touch with your base, right, that you have relationship with, there's going to be deals in there that are people holding on to the wrong information, but may really want to sell.
Yeah, I think, you know, my advice going into 2025 is people are no longer moving because they want to. They're moving because they have to. I think this has been the same thing in 2024. People are moving because of life things. You know, they're getting divorced, they're getting married, they're having kids, they're getting deployed, they're downsizing, there was a death, whatever the thing may be. It's going to be a life event, and the person that is closest to them at the moment of that life event happening is going to get that business. I think the other, you know, what you brought up about inventory is that when there is a lack of inventory, you need to go create inventory. So your relationships, just like your database for who's looking to buy or sell, is going to be around who could I create value to my consumers through because I'm able to create inventory. Now, the issue, going back to your point about like, why hasn't there been inventory increases by home, like by builders? Yeah, it was 2008, still coming back from that. But the issue is also jurisdictional. You have issues with zoning and HOAs and cities and things like that about what's allowable inside of a different piece of land. And that's why you're seeing a lot of builders being like, what's your biggest pain point is the zoning and permitting around that. So that needs to be changed. Got to figure that one out. But I think at the end of the day, if you're able to figure out who has life events that are happening that are necessary, and then you can go out and have a value proposition. This is my one, and I'll leave this. I'll let you close up, Dave, is like, if you're sitting down, you know, the one thing that I see all the time and work with all the agents I meet with and all the brokers and all that is I say, what's your vision? What's your mission? What's your value proposition? That might sound stupid, but frankly, most people are like, they can't articulate. They stare at you and say, I respond to you and I get you data. And I look at the 20 years of transactions I've done. Fabulous. Awesome. But like, if I'm trying to change the human experience around home ownership, I need to be able to say, I'm your advisor. These are all the advisory services I provide. This is how you can buy with me. This is how you can sell with me. Here's the products you can't get without me. right? And then here's how I'm going to help you manage your home. This is how I'm going to help make sure that, because I've got all these other services, I'm going to make sure that risk-wise, you're perfectly good, insurance, home warranty, whatever it may be. And then I'm going to make sure that we start looking at how you deploy your capital in the vehicle of real estate moving forward. And I think if you can go back to, once again, an advisor that has risk mitigation and capital deployment, and you're able to stay in contact with people and during their life events, you're going to be able to articulate through story how you helped your prior clients, and that you don't want to miss out by using somebody that's had their license for the past like 6 months and just knows how to push paperwork. And I think that's what 2025 is going to entail for the people that want to succeed and be able to provide that continuity to their clients.
Well, Joe, look, I think you're spot on. And as we wrap this up, I think that's kind of been the ongoing theme, right, for the second half of this year about the people we've talked to and the focus of it is, right, focus on your business, focus on your consumers, focus on their asset of their home, right? You do what you're doing and continue to do it well, your business will increase because we're going to see the numbers go up and you'll learn how to generate business from within this period, right? People have gotten through tough times, right? Both business owners in the real estate field and the homeowners themselves, that they start to try to understand, right? Most people don't understand what's happening, nor do they really care about what the agents care about that we thought they might. They're asking better questions, right? But those skilled agents and business owners, right, set their value, and that pushback that they inherently believe is there dissipates very, very quickly. So focus on yours, continue to grow. We'll see growth in 2025 as we set for the next norm for the next decade, right? So everybody, thanks for tuning in. We're excited to see what 2025 brings. From myself and Joe, thanks for tuning in to Entrepreneurial Impact. Take care.